Welcome to episode 213 of Redboard Rewind. My name is Spencer Luganbiel, and today my special guest is In the Money Media's very own Dean Kepler. Me and Dean go over three races from this past Saturday at Santa Anita. Those races were 5, 7, and 9. And some angles that we talk about are: when long shots win races, sometimes it's bad trips by favorites that can help you find the best bet back spots. And also, in a race where you have a lot of contenders circled, it's always best to take a horse with a little bit of value against the chalk. This is Redboard Rewind. It's the same old story in this tugboat. We go back and forth. We go back and forth. It ain't good for me what we do this for. We go back and forth. Won't do this no more. All we always have to sell it. 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 All we And now I'd like to welcome in my special guest for this week's edition of Redboard Rewind, someone who I love to have on when we talk that West Coast racing action. It's Dean Kepler. Dean, how are you?
Spencer, how's it going? Good to be back on here again.
Excited to have you back on. Obviously, you're the man who, if you have a training stat that you want to ask someone about or just talk about, you're the man to talk with. But the one stat I think we're going to talk about real quick that we brought up before we got on the pod: 46% winners at Santa Anita so far. Just, you know, it's hard enough when we say, oh, it went from 30% to 36. We're talking, you know, 10 points higher than that. I would imagine the meet's been tough on you and probably hard on a lot of people who look for value more than just look for chalk.
Yeah, when you know, Spencer, when you see a figure like that, you would think that, you know, it would correct itself somewhat as the meet progressed on. But it's been pretty steady, sticking in the mid to low 40s there. And, that's really been challenging, and it kind of really forces your hand to really pick your spots. And if you're a multi-race horizontal better like myself, it's, something you want to focus most of your attention on and, you know, try to single out those short priced horses, and hopefully you can string them together with some prices and get some value out of those multi-race bets.
Let's say if we're even playing a pick six or a pick five, you know, two of those three winners are going to be chalked then based on the way the odds are going so far. And I feel, and we'll get to the race we're talking about, all three of the races were on the turf, not so much on the dirt. So in some ways, when you're playing these sequences, you want to hope to see some turf races in there from my point of view. And I just wonder going forward, it's hard, man, when you're just like, oh, I need to go five deep in this race because I think five can win, including the favorite. And it's like, well, you just kind of have to chop the favorite out and just hope that that's one of the races where, you know, intuition works. I kind of feel like in the opening race that we're going to talk about later, that was more of, I've handicapped so many races. Yes, the favorite could win the race, but I like a couple of others in here. It's more the intuition of, you know, not that races meld together, as I'm sure you know what I'm talking about, but I feel that, like, you see the same kind of situation pop up, and you're like, well, the last time I picked the favorite, the favorite didn't win. It's kind of the same situation. Yes, all of them are deemed, you know, different tracks, different settings. But I feel like when you have that same type of idea pop up, it's like, I'm not going to keep getting swallowed up by chalk here. I'm going to try and, you know, at least venture out into the land of value.
Yeah, you start to, you know, you play enough races and you handicap enough, you start to be able to spot play the races that, you know, the favorites appear to be vulnerable. And, you know, they have some knocks against them, whether it be a trainer that has poor stats or a horse coming off a long layoff, or, you know, just maybe some spaces in his morning drills that put up some red flags, you know. So if you can find a chalk in those kind of races that you have more than a few knocks on, you know, I think it's, you know, that's, you know, those are the types of races that you're supposed to be, you know, taking a shot and spreading out a little bit and hoping to catch a prize.
One of the best things I always tell beginning handicappers is if you don't have a ton of time to handicap the race, you can only handicap, you know, say the first half of the card. I always tell people, at least break down the races by sprints or surface distance or by class type, and go back for the whole week. Look at all the maiden special weight winners. Look at all the maiden claiming winners. Is there anything, you know, where 9 out of 10 of them, you know, within two lengths of the pace? Like, that's not something that when people work every single day of the year, but you're kind of breaking, you know, these different tier ideas of, okay, well, you know, it makes perfect sense. The horse that should be on the lead in a maiden claimer would win most of the races because not a lot of these horses like to pass. But once you kind of have that idea, it's, okay, I'm not going to take horses that are five off in the last few races, no matter how good their buyer figure is, because that's not the type of pace that's been winning these races for the past 14 days.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think it's imperative to go back and, you know, once a weekend passes, you got usually a three-day week at Santa Anita, go back and, like you said, break down the races, see if there's a particular running style, you know, see if there's a speed bias that's in place, you know, throughout the weekend. And it's something that you can incorporate, you know, the following week, and it certainly could help manage your tickets better.
Or just something that, you know, me and you generally like to talk about a lot with trainer stats. If, you know, John Sadler, who, listen, he's better than the, you know, 10% average that we see from a lot of trainers. But if John Sadler hits with two or three horses that are, you know, above a $10 win bet or a $10 win ticket, you know, that's more important to me than when Bob Baffert wins with six horses under even money, because at least with John Sadler, the public isn't noticing that the barn is heating up. He's doing it, you know, maybe all three winners are on the turf. Okay, well, then I'm just not going to look at Sadler horses on the dirt like I would on turf. And then all of a sudden you find out, oh, JJ Hernandez was on all three. Well, going into the next week, I'm circling all three of those, and I'm like, don't just toss them out based on your usual merits. This horse deserves a look back because of what the barn has done in previous weeks.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. You know, and thing is, trainers can change too. You know, they have a knack for doing something a certain way, and then all of a sudden you notice, you know, the next three out of four winners is something they haven't done in the past. And, you know, that could be, you know, that could happen for tons of different reasons. They can have some new ownerships, a new training style, you know, something different that they're doing. But it's, you know, it's imperative that you keep track of, you know, anything that you can as far as, you know, a trainer angle that changes. And, you know, like all of a sudden a trainer's doing great on the turf, and it's, you know, traditionally his turf starters weren't that great, but you go back and say, hey, listen, he had two turf winners over the weekend. You know, for example, you take somebody like Baffert and he pops with three turf horses that, you know, say over the weekend that he's not really known for his turf. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all of a sudden he's, you know, he's got some wins in there. It certainly pays to pay attention to, you know, when something that you have an angle that doesn't traditionally fit in that role, and he's doing something a little outside of the box and something that you haven't seen before. Cause you know, a lot of the time they'll come back and they'll do the same thing over and over again.
Let's move into the first of our three races today. We're going to start with race number five from Santa Anita. We're going down the hill, 6.5. It's a state optional 50,000 and one X. Dean, what'd you kind of like in here? I thought there was kind of a lot of different ways you can go in this race.
Yeah, Spencer, this, you know, the one thing I could come up with this race is it looked like there was going to be a lot of pace. So, you know, I kind of focused on the horses I thought were going to be making up some ground late. My top pick was number eight, Can't Sleep, who was stepping up off an impressive winning debut for Charlie and Carla Gaines, going to 6.5 for a long trip. He co-topped the field's best last out turf buyer. Looked like he was going to get another live race flow. I also went with my second pick was Quick Kate. Just continues to improve with each start for Craig Lewis. She actually finished in front of several of these same fillies back on February 16th. And there's another look like could have a live pace. And also number two, Shamrockin', who closed well to finish the wide fourth behind Quake Kate at this level when making her initial start against winner. She was making her third start back today, which is traditionally a runner's best. And she also looked like she would be coming from behind. So, you know, my initial picks were 8-3-2 in here.
Listen, I had three of those circled. I think the fourth one I had was even the number seven, Sashula, going blinkers off. I think that for a long time growing up, I always thought, you know, blinkers off was a negative compared to blinkers on is helping the program. And now going and looking back on it from just new books from Barry Meadow, et cetera, blinkers off, they should have fixed the problem because that's why they're taking them off to begin with. So I thought that was a little bit interesting at a price if they go back to the debut race and not the race second off of the career starter. Can't Sleep, like you said, maiden special weight, 62, was going to be the one closing. I just thought 5-2, everyone's kind of running around the same figure. I hate to single out horses when they kind of have that same figure. Can I find something else? But if this one is going to run just as well, this one's going to run a 70 and run them off their feet, so be it. Quick Kate, good turf stats for trainer Craig Lewis. Also him and JJ, positive ROI with a lot of starts there. So a good trainer jockey combo. This one's been on there every single time, has yet to miss the board. So there's nothing to not like about Quick Kate. The one that I just couldn't get away with was Shamrockin. Like you had said, you know, 54-1 on the debut. Now it goes down to 8-1, gets the hot pace like we're expecting today, and finishes just behind Quick Kate. And when I look at the board and I see 2-1 and then 8-1, are we talking 6 points of difference on the odds board because a horse finished a length and a half back? Maybe, so be it. Obviously, JJ's riding better than Franco, and obviously, Craig Lewis has better numbers. So that could also lead up to why there's such a difference. I just thought 8-1 was too much when this horse is running 62, just as much as this one's running 62 last time. It was at the level, and this is the first time this one, you know, facing winners in that last race with Shamrockin. The maiden win won kind of the same way. This one looks like it's going to need a pace. I thought kind of the same way as you. Going to be a fast pace up front. I just took Shamrockin and I took Shashula. And if one of the two favorites wins, so be it. But I want that odds difference because if I hit one, like it just comes down to a basic math thing. Yeah, I can hit that 1 out of 10 times, I'm going to make money. If I'm betting the favorites, I have to hit just much more time. And I've just seen over time, when a lot of these horses have the same kind of buyer figures, you should be looking for price, not so much for just taking chalk like it was most of the day up to that day.
Yeah, I can't say I disagree with you there, Spencer. You know, the two Shamrockin, like I said, he was making his third start back to, which is usually is actually his third lifetime career start, which is a big angle for me. Like I said, that's usually traditionally a horse's best effort. And his buyers are going in the right direction, so you got to think that this filly has some room for improvement there.
Can't Sleep, Quick Kate, Shamrockin for Dean. I'm going with Shamrockin and the Shashula. Let's see who gets the win right now.
They're off. Clubhouse Bride is the early leader. On the outside, Can't Sleep is flashing good speed, and the Shashala is in between them, moving up to take second. Panda Peak is fourth, now third, moving through along the inside. Then it's a gap of three. Crown of Hope is racing between horses. Quick Kate at the rail, recalcitrant between those two. Dory Miller is 5 lengths off the lead, and Shamrockin is at the back. It's Clubhouse Bride, who has gone past the half-mile pole. Here comes the Shashala to engage in second. The Shashala, very keen, pressing Clubhouse Bride around the far turn. Can't Sleep, 3 off the pace at the rail. Panda Peak is next. Then comes Dory Miller, widest of all. Here's Quick Kate, starting to pick up some momentum. Has 5 to make up at the quarter pole. Recalcitrant is awaiting some racing room. They're at the top of the stretch, and Clubhouse Bride goes on and opens up. Clubhouse Bride suddenly 4 in front. Here's Can't Sleep starting to kick in now. And from the back, Shamrockin has surfaced and is flying home late. Clubhouse Bride, here comes Shamrockin on the outside. It's going to get close. And Shamrockin from last to first.
And Shamrockin does get the job done. 69, the winning buyer. Looking at a winning mutual of $18. I think I was more surprised that my second choice didn't run as well, but the fact, you know, Can't Sleep ends up running third and Quick Kate doesn't miss the board finally in this race. This race was kind of a cluster for me because I don't know really what to expect coming out of this race. Shamrockin improves third lifetime start. You get that good price odd different. Can't Sleep improved a little bit, but only to a 64. I think that's kind of disappointing when you have to look at it in just long term for a trainer when they put a horse in this spot. And Quick Kate didn't run as well either. So I think looking back at this race, I would mention to think that this race is going to be one of the weaker optional 50s on the turf, you know, throughout this month or throughout this 2 week period. And that I'm not looking forward to betting a lot of these coming out, especially the two favorites at that type of price.
Yeah. You know, I should also mention not to take anything away from the runner up Clubhouse Bride, who I thought ran very well. She was still running at the end there, and she fought really, really gamely the entire trip there, and she wound up getting a place spot at, you know, 26-1, and it was, you know, a really fine effort by her as well.
I think, too, you know, everyone always says, like, oh, the more long shots that finish on the board, you know, the less impressive the race is, and looking at what a lot, you know, so a lot of these horses, you know, blinkers off, you know, coming in, not so much with trainer changes, but, you know, run that well in this race either. But I think that there was just such an equal type and idea around this race that when you can find these types and listen, you know, late pick or early pick five, and you can find a nice separator here when everyone's been picking chalk all day, that's the one that, you know, will obviously gets out, especially when you have two favorites in here, like in this race. A lot of people are going to have Can't Sleep and Quick K on their tickets, or they're going to switch between the two and hopefully be right. And that's still a scary proposition. But when you can find horses like Shamrock in that will separate, and hopefully, you know, certain people have tickets where maybe they did go deeper in this race because they understood how close it was and they were going a lot, you know, skinnier up front. But I think this is the type of race that's a really good separator when looking at horizontal tickets.
Yeah, and you know, it's just one more thing to add too. You know, you're dealing with three-year-old fillies that are lightly raced, you know, switching from dirt to turf, dirt to, you know, equipment changes. A lot of things can happen. You know, they can jump up and, you know, and it can prove immensely from race to race here, especially when, you know, most of them only had two or three starts in here. So but certainly something to consider too. When you're putting those multi-race tickets, you know, together, that, you know, if there's going to be a price, you know, it's a good chance it's going to come, you know, in a field like this.
Let's move on to the next race, race number 7. We're going to be talking about a maiden special weight, 1 1/8 miles on the turf. I'll just let mine go real quick. I thought the favorite in here, Let Seamus Go, was the one to have. Just been improving over the last two. Ran a new buyer top last time. I thought this was the one speed horse in this race that would just kind of go to the front and just have it its own way. What'd you like in this one, Dean?
Yeah, I actually went to, you know, the two, you know, the same reason. Bartholdi here, the blinkers came back on today. He stretches back out. You know, he was a wide fourth in that last race back on February 3rd in his initial grass try. You know, and, you know, my projection was here that he was going to be in front, and I thought he was going to take him, you know, perhaps gate to wire here, going second time Lasix. And I just thought he'd find himself, if not on a lead, certainly close to it. And, you know, he was my top pick in here. I think I initially went 2-3-6 in here as my top three.
I think, too, when looking through this, and listen, there's not a lot of maiden special weights, A, on the grass, A, going this long. I wondered in this race, you know, we have Indispensable, 4-1, Joel with John, just, you know, 0-5, maiden special weight level. You know, not a lot of horses, Let Seamus Go, like we had said, 4 starts. A lot of these horses, you know, again, lightly raced, but nothing had really shown a ton of confidence to bet this type of race, especially when they have the distance limitations like they might have going this far of a distance.
Yeah, you know, the other horse that, you know, I thought would improve would be the 3 American Glory, who was making his second stateside start for Leonard Parrell, who is usually, you know, pretty good with these imports that he brings over on the turf. They're usually in shape and ready to run. And, you know, it's, you know, his first start was pretty good. He got beaten, I guess, less than 3 lengths. He ran 3rd there. Like I said, it was his first stateside start. It was going a mile. Any normal progressive movement forward, he should prove in this spot. And, you know, that was one I would certainly had on my ticket there, the 3 there. And then, like I said, I went to, you know, the 6, who was a logical threat again off his, you know, his last finish there at this level. Had a decent grass buyer of 75, but you know, the one caveat I had about him wasn't convinced that he wanted to go this additional 1/8 mm-hmm. of a mile. So, you know, all in all was, you know, a pretty wide open race when you go back and look at it overall. I think it was, you could come up and make a case for, you know, a lot of these different 3-year-olds in here.
Bartholdi for Dean. For me, I'm going to go with some chalk and Let Seamus Go. Let's see who breaks our maiden right now.
And they're off. Bad stumble for Indispensable. Somehow Rosario stayed aboard. Bartholdi is going out for the early lead. Let Seamus Go comes away in second. And here's Shot of Courage on the outside, now taking the second spot. Sketchy and Chasing Rain are next. A couple of lengths in front of American Glory, who's 6 lengths off the lead by the stands the first time. Niti is second to last, and Indispensable trails. Into the first turn, and Bartholdi is the leader, has it pretty comfortably by a length and a half. Shot of Courage on the outside gets a little closer once again in second and lets Sheamus go in hand, traveling smoothly in third. Sketchy is fourth at this stage, three lengths off the lead and tugging a bit, racing two in front of Chasing Rain, American Glory, Neaty, and Indispensable. Down the back stretch, it's Bartholdi with a narrow advantage. Shot of Courage about a half length back in second. Then Sketchy third on the outside. And at the rail, let Sheamus go. Let Sheamus go now takes third clearly as they move into the far turn. Chasing Rain and American Glory in the purple colors. Six off the lead. Two more back to Neaty and another couple to Indispensable. Bartholdi is now called on, trying to sprint. Shot of Courage right with him in second. Then comes Sketchy. Let Sheamus go. Has saved every inch of ground. Chasing Rain, American Glory. Neaty swings to the outside with Indispensable. An eighth to go. Bartholdi just in front of half length. Sketchy up alongside now. Behind them, American Glory is starting to kick in. They're coming to the 16th pole. And Sketchy takes the lead from the back. Here's Neaty. And Neaty's coming after Sketchy. Sketchy held on narrowly.
And is Sketchy getting the job done? 75 the winning buyer, 49-40 the winning mutual. By far largest winner of the day. And looking through, you know, you have three horses sub 4-1 on the odds board. Those were by far the three horses that the public thought would win. And instead we get this horse like Sketchy that just gets the job done for Perea and Ronald Ellis. And I mean, looking through, kind of the same three races back to back to back, but you know, when you look through and you see the 394 and the Tomlinson, there's not a lot else, you know, being that high. Indispensable was about as high, but nothing in like the fours. This one maybe had a pedigree standard that just he wanted to go that far. And listen, it wasn't like it was a blowout race. You know, Neaty ran right behind, and so Indispensable.
Yeah, Spencer, I think, you know, Monday morning quarterback here, but I think the addition of Blinkers really made a big difference here with Sketchy. He kind of got him, you know, got himself into the race, stalking off the pace. He was only a couple lengths off the lead. And I think, you know, the addition there of the equipment chains was probably, you know, probably made the difference here for Ron Ellis. You know, got this son of Uncle Mower into the race early. He was, you know, he's kind of had a grinding style to begin with, at least in his first four starts. And then, you know, that was a case, I think he was closer to the pace and he just, you know, punched it in here. But, you know, as far as trips go, I'd recommend that, you know, any of the players, Southern California players, go back and watch this race because there was a ton of stuff going on here. Immediately from the start to five, Indispensable. Nearly lost a rider. He went right down to his knees at the start. Very, very bad stumble, taking this colt pretty much out of race. And, you know, he closed up to run third, probably was best in this race here. And then the other horse that I mentioned too, American Glory, was making up some good ground too. Kind of got in a tight spot, shied away a little bit, you know, and also I thought ran, you know, a really good race as well. So Those would be two horses, you know, you would certainly want to play back, I think, next time, just because of some bad trips. And, you know, if you went back in there and looked again, I'm sure you could find a couple others. But like I said, there was a lot going on in this race here.
A race of trips, a race of traps. For me, the trap was taking the favorite there. Didn't run all that well at all. But we will move on to the last race of this podcast, race number 9 at Santa Anita. It is an optional 50,000, starter allowance 50,000, 1 mile on the turf. And I kind of had to go with two in this. I thought Lahani Flavor being my top pick, Umberto Rispoli, Patrick Gallagher. Looking through, I've always been one, as JK always says, you know, closing with blue fractions, you can always upgrade that performance a little bit. And this one has been running the same type of race the last four or five starts. There were other horses in here, and a lot of times you're looking for the horse that will improve. But I kind of thought, why don't we just take this horse at 4-1 at a solid price that kind of has good enough numbers to just win the race? The other one I also wanted to use, Smooth Salute, third off the claim for Alfredo Marquez. Small figures so far, you know, 5 in the money and 2 wins and 9 starts. But I just thought if you look through again, if I'm already going to take a closer with blue fractions, I might as well take this one as well, getting the right price. And I just thought this one slowly had been improving, you know, kind of ran the same back-to-back figures. I thought these two and a Wind Dutch would be the right way to go in this. What do you think, Dean?
Yeah, I took a little bit of a flyer here, 10-1 morning line of number 4 Circle of Champions, mainly because, you know, this is a trainer stat angle for me. Carla Gaines has done well with these long layoff grass types in the past. And if you go back and look at some of this 6-year-old's buyer figures, specifically 2 and 3, 4 back, posted some 80s, which is certainly the quickest in this field. You know, the only knock, obviously, is the 1 for 17. But I thought, you know, coming off the 10-month layoff here for Carla, he was certainly, you know, worth a shot here in the nightcap. And my second pick was number 5, Caribbean King, who came off the Steve Knapp claim with, you know, paying dividends immediately with a maiden victory off the claim there on February 17th. And I thought he had a threat right back facing winners. So I went, my top picks was 4 or 5.
I always like, too, when you see a horse coming off the claim like that, and they put this one right back in, same level, same type of running style, and, you know, get that nice little boost. And it's always nice to see, you know, when they come, everyone always says, like, you know, you never want to see them drop when they come right back. But when they come back at the same level, I think Steve kind of knew exactly where he wanted to have this horse. He gets the win there, and now they kind of get to, you know, show exactly where they're going to go up the ladder to make this horse, you know, keep showing improving performances.
Yeah, and he's, you know, he's had a really good beat, clicking close to 20%. Seems to be doing all the right things. And like I said, the horse is, you know, it was pretty impressive in that maiden 50 victory, winning by 2 lengths. And it, you know, looked like he was ready to come back with another top effort. And I really do like Hector Berrios on the grass. He's an excellent grass rider, and I certainly give him extra consideration when I see him show up on the turf anywhere.
Circle of Champions, Caribbean King for Dean. For myself, I'm going with Lahani Flavor, and we're going to go Smooth Salute to finish up my 2-horse Wind Dutch. Let's see who gets done in the nightcap right now.
They're off. Gold Council is quick out of the gate. Caribbean King with solid natural speed. And Talos along the rail is up to take a narrow lead. Arrogate Spirit is the gray on the outside. They are followed by My Ransom, who's 5 lengths off the lead. Passed by Circle of Champions, who's in the red colors down on the inside. Circle of Champions in a tight spot just on the inside of Caribbean King, rounding the first turn, having to steady and tap on the brakes. Smooth Salute has 8 lengths to make up. Followed by Saint Ignacio. Precision Strike is second to last. And Lahaina Flavor covered up at the back of the field, down the back stretch. And it's Talos and Jose Valdivia Jr. leading and getting pressed by Gold Council in second. Circle of Champions, Caribbean King are right together, and Arrogate Spirit is in 5th, 4 lengths off the leaders. My Ransom is down at the rail, 3 in front of Smooth Salute. Then Saint Ignacio, 8 lengths off the pace into the far turn. Lahaina Flavor and Precision Strike. Talos and Gold Council head and head rounding the far turn. It's been a good trip for Caribbean King, who's called on now 3 deep. Circle of Champions is down at the rail in 4th. Lahaina Flavor is angling out. He's had a good trip and kicks in with an 1/8 of a mile to go. Here's Lahaina Flavor let loose on the outside of Caribbean King. These two come to the 16th pole together, and Lahaina Flavor puts his head in front of Caribbean King. It's Lahaina Flavor patiently and perfectly ridden by Umberto Rispo.
And is Lahaina Flavor getting the job done? 77, the winning buyer. 880, the winning mutual. If you guys haven't guessed already from these 3 races, these were the 3 longest shots on the board on Saturday at Santa Anita. That's why we kind of wanted to start off our talk with the favorites and how they've been hitting so well. But we also wanted to show you guys that there is a way. You know, I guess Sketchy's probably the one that's hard to get away from, but $18 horse, $8 horse. I think overall, looking through these races, you can kind of try to find horses like this. Listen, Lahaina Flavor did exactly what I thought. Didn't improve the figure at all and still got the job done.
Yeah, I mean, if there's a knock against, you know, the 7 in here, really had a perfect trip,
yeah.
You know, by Rispoli. Gave him a great ride in there. May want to knock him next, you know, slightly knock him next time around just because of that. And, you know, the horse that I had selected, Circle of Champions, I pretty much lost it around the first turn. He was steadied
yeah.
repeatedly there, kind of taken out of the race. So You know, he's certainly one I would play back again, and you know, you're probably going to get another decent price on him for sure.
It's interesting too, seeing it, this with this being the nightcap. This is the one where it seems that, you know, the public still was kind of all over. Yes, it wasn't, you know, that 3-5 shot that we saw throughout most of the day, or that even money shot, but 3-1, 3-1, 4-1, it was pretty much all top threes in there. This is just a race that I think the public couldn't switch around between the three they liked. And I think when you look back at kind of where they were for all different horses, these ones were kind of the ones you wanted and all had, you know, some knocks, but a lot of good things when you're looking to try to find the winners in these type of class levels.
Oh, for sure. For sure. And like I said, you know, playing these multi-race exotics, you know, as we had mentioned in the beginning here, can really take a sting at some of these, these heavy favorites that seem to be, you know, coming in this meet clicking, you know, close to 50%, which is unusually high. Like I said, it usually starts to correct itself as the meet goes on, but it's been staying high. But you know, I think the pick four, and especially the pick five, I'm a pick five player. I think there's still plenty of opportunities to, you know, to single those chalky horses and, you know, spread it in these, you know, some of the races that we went over. And you could still, you know, you could still put a good ticket together and get paid well.
That is all the time we have for today's podcast. I do want to thank my special guest, Dean Kepler, for coming on. Dean, what do you got going on over at In the Money for the weekend?
Yep, our selections, you know, we'll be back at it again, Friday through Sunday. You can find me over at Twitter at Kep's Corner. And, you know, anytime there's a live racing card at Santa Anita or Del Mar or anywhere in Southern California, I'll be covering it. And, you know, the analysis is free. And I encourage everybody to go over there and take a look.
Thank you so much for all your time today. Thank you all so much for all the picks you do over In the Money. And we'll be talking soon, all right?
Sounds good, Spencer. Thanks for having me.
I would like to thank everyone who listens to this podcast and the rest of the podcast on In the Money Media Network. Also want to thank my special guest, Dean Kepler, for coming on, talking all things West Coast racing with myself. This show has been a production of In the Money Media. In the Money Media's president is Peter Thomas Fornatel. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin, and our In the Money Media business manager is Drew Coatney. I'm Spencer Luganbuehl. We will see you next time.